Good afternoon. The House Education Finance Committee will come to order. Let's see, Representative Jerkins, would you like to move adoption of the minutes?
Yes, Madam Chair, I've read the minutes. I'd like to move them.
All right. Any questions or discussion about the minutes from March 2nd in your packets? Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Minutes are adopted. Thank you, Representative Jerkins. And with that, Representative Tice, are you ready with your bill and your testifiers? Great. Come on up. So we will start, members, with House File 268, sponsored by Representative Tice, which is in your packet. All right, and Representative Tice moves that House File 268 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further action at a later time. And with that, we are anxious to hear about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm very anxious to tell you about my bill. I think this is one of the coolest things ever to happen in this legislature. We came forward last year and said, we want to move the Santa Foundation to St. Cloud because we think it'll do great things. Guess what, folks? It has been incredibly wonderful. It has made such a difference in the St. Cloud school districts, and it just makes us all squeal happy. You can imagine what that means. It has just been going phenomenally. Everybody loves it, and I'm not going to take much time because I want you to hear from Tony Sana himself about his mission for this, his goal, and what we'd like to see happen in the future.
All right, welcome. And please to state your name before you provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Tony Sani, and I'm the CEO of the Sani Foundation. And I'm happy to be back, and I want to thank you guys for believing us and investing. And we told you last year that we were going to come back and give you great data on the work we've done, and we think we've done that. The Dream Mind program is a blended in-school, after-school, academic, year-round enrichment program that focuses on middle schools, high schools, and developing future leaders, teachers, youth workers with a focus on low-income communities. We work in schools in four different core areas. One is classroom assistance. We support students in the classroom. We also support students in a support room or behavioral support room in the schools. We support schools, kids after school in enrichment activities if they're willing to stay after and do homework. We put three full-time staff in every school. We've expanded this year to Minneapolis schools and all the St. Cloud schools. Part of the reason why we have success is data, actually, and our staff will tell you that they're not happy about it because we make sure that they record everything they do, and we correlate it to all the results. To date, this year, we've spent over 260 hours in professional development of our staff, including 120 hours before school started, two full master's level classes with a partnership with St. Paul Federation of Teachers and St. Mary's University. This is giving our staff an opportunity to get licensure and their master's level credits while working in schools. We also have a great partnership with the Search Institute. And we talk about social emotional skills that studies have shown that influence a student's desire to learn and their ability to work hard in schools and other areas of life. So we build character with kids in schools by holding them accountable and letting them, you know, build their own dreams. In our package, you can show that the demographics of our coaches mirror the students that we're working with in the schools. We are one of very few programs that have been able to recruit a high number of populations of color to work as support. And I'm not talking about behavioral. We get the same behavioral outcomes, but we come from it from a relationship building and support. Obviously, I said it was about data. Last year when we were here, we did not have the data from the St. Paul Public Schools because it was only preliminary. Now we have it. In our data, we know that our Fs were down 18%. We know our Ds were down 55%. Our Cs were down 7%. Our Bs were up 12%, and our As were up 64%. So all the bad grades went down, all the good grades went up. We also use that data to improve and correlate what we do. We found out that in the first semester in St. Paul Public Schools last year, African-American students had a total of 9 A's in English, in language. language arts, and those were the students that we were working with. By the fourth quarter, there were 141 A's, so over 1,000% increase. We also found out that Hispanic students only had 2 A's in math class in the first quarter. By the last quarter, there were 67, so another huge gain. We also know that through our data, we found out that relationship building is important, and it's what we built our whole foundation on. And it doesn't matter if we spend 40 hours a year doing academic support, 8 of those hours, or approximately 1 hour a month, has to be spent in one-on-one relationship building. We found the largest increase of academic success when we spent that time with one-on-one, at least an hour every month over the course of the year with the student to get the academic outcomes. So going off of some of the data that we have that we think is shows the value of the investment, an example, last year at Humboldt, when the students came to us, most of the students were passing one or two classes. By the end of the year, 44% of those students were passing all the classes, and this year those same students are passing 70% of those students are passing all the classes. So when you look at the starting point, they've made huge strides. Our program has also been flexible in the schools. In Jefferson Middle School, for instance, we focused on language. They have a lot of ESL, a high Hispanic and Somali population. We've seen a 24% and 11% increase among 7th and 8th graders, respectively, in their test scores. And this is only in a short time. In the St. Cloud School District, while we have great preliminary academic data, it's not complete yet. But we do have behavioral data. And when we saw it from the school district, it actually, you know, blew our minds. We have, you know, approximately an average of 45% to 60% increase in behavioral reduction in every school. And I was asking, you know, the principal why this is so important. He said, well, in the major ones, if they're not in school, they can't learn. So as I go through it, South Junior High, we have a 42% and an 84% reduction in major incidents and minor incidents. At McKinley Area Learning Center, we have a 50% and a 60% decrease. North High, we have a 63% and 80%. Apollo, we have a 17%, and we're looking at that data, but still it's positive. And lastly, at St. Cloud Tech, we have a 66% reduction with 6 or more incidents. We have a 64% decrease with 2 to 5 incidents, and an 83% reduction with 1 incident. So I hope this is the data that you're asking for. We've proven that through relationship building and proper training and our ability to work with the schools, we've built an effective program that not only helps school have academic success, but work with families and school districts. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Osana. I really appreciate your testimony. If it's okay, I think we'll go to questions for you, and then we'll turn to our next group of testifiers.
Okay.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you very much. Do you have attendance data on
yes.
improvement?
Yes.
Mr. Osana.
Thank you, Representative. Yes, we have attendance improvement, and a lot of times the depending on the school, the attendance will be wrapped in with the behavior because truancy is part of it. But we've seen an improvement in academics and attendance as well as things like defiance and physical as well.
But no percentages or?
Mr. Santa.
Representative, I don't have them exactly with me because we actually measure everything. So if I was, I would have to give you a 500-page packet because from truancy to swearing at a teacher to getting kicked out of class to not coming to school to becoming late. But I think our assistant principal will be able to tell you what he's seen because he looks up the data on a daily basis.
Okay. I'll wait then.
All right. Thank you.
But I am interested in bodies in the classroom. Behaving bodies.
Behaving bodies, yes. Well, and that...
Mr. Santa.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. And I can guarantee you that because kids are having less major incidents, they're not kicked out of school, and so they are in school learning.
Thank you. Let's see, other questions? If not, we'll turn to our next set of testifiers. And let's see, we have... Well, I'll just let you introduce yourselves. So thank you for being with us, and if you'd each provide your names prior to your testimony, And as you heard, there's an interest in any attendance numbers you have and that you can attribute to improvement with the utilizing the staff from the Santa Foundation. So if you could comment on that in your remarks as well. So welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representatives. My name is Stephen Flukas, and I'm the Assistant Principal at Tech High School in St. Cloud, Minnesota. I want to take the opportunity to tell you about this fantastic program called DreamLine. DreamLine is a program that makes an incredible difference in our school because we put passionate, motivated young people carrying a caseload of 20 to 25 students with a specific focus targeted on individual students. So to answer your question about attendance, our attendance rate is 100%. Because if students aren't where they need to be, we go find them and get them there. Period. The focus and the primary piece about DreamLine that I enjoy is that there's a focus, there's rigor, and there's coherence. You need those three pieces in schools. Specifically, our DreamLine people are looking at scheduling. Are students where they need to be? Homework completion. Are students doing their homework? Do they know how to do their homework? And is the endless bottomless pit called the backpack in effect? So does that homework get turned in? About the socialization process, are students enjoying the learning process and do they feel connected to schools? Do we have daily contact with a parent? A teacher can't pick up the phone in the middle of a classroom and call a parent, but guess what? A DreamLine coach can step out of the classroom and call a parent or text a parent information about what's going on with the student. As Mr. Sinead said earlier, our behavior referrals just at Tech alone are down 60%. And the reason I believe, as an assistant principal, because those are the behavior referrals that come to me. My job as an assistant principal is to understand what's going on with that student, eliminate the problem, and get them back to learning as quickly as possible. When we have individuals in the school that are engaged in learning and focused on helping students be successful, you'll eliminate some of the byproduct that prevent students from getting to class, that creates 1,000 homework excuses why homework doesn't get done. And that's why we're seeing the results that we are. In essence, what we've done is we've increased the school day. If teachers are not focused on dealing with behavior or dealing with issues, what are they doing? They have more time to teach. But the great piece is it doesn't only help our students at risk. What about our students that are achieving and beyond grade level? If teachers' times are tied up with students with behavior issues, guess what the teacher's not doing? They're not teaching students that are already at grade level and that need their support also. DreamLine has been a catalyst in our school. I'm an old STEM principal. STEM, of course, stands for Science, Technology, Engineering, and Math. But we know that DreamLine has been a catalyst for me in my career. Why? Because it puts energetic individuals in the school that are creating physical and social-emotional change with students. And guess what? They're not used up in the process. So the next day, they come back and do the same thing again and again. Are those students where they're supposed to be? Are they engaged in learning? Do they have homework? Are they prepared for the learning process? Absolutely they are. So the impact specifically has been, at Tech alone, our homework completion rates for just our at-risk students are up 83%. Our students stating that they feel emotionally engaged and connected in learning at Tech High School is up over 80%. Our contact with parents on a daily basis is up over 70%. And students are talking about enjoying coming to school because they feel that they are connected in learning and they have someone that's helping them look out for their best interest. Again, this is a program where we push students, push adults into the school during the day. We have an after-school program. And at times, we'll pull students out of the classroom also to help enhance the learning in the classroom. So again, it has been a fantastic catalyst at Tech School.
Thank you very much, Mr. Flukas. Appreciate your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Kim Johnson, and I am the DreamLine Program Manager in St. Cloud. And 6 months ago, I did not know anything about the DreamLine program. And 6 months into it now, I can't express how passionate I am about the program. And within 6 months, I knew we were being successful because we had students attending that weren't before. We had grades going up. But until I saw this data and saw how successful we were, it's really shocking when you get a chance to look at it to see that. I mean, for example, at one school, 84% reduction in major and minors is huge. And to speak to our coaches, so the definition of a coach for the DreamLine program is more of a, I think of it as a life coach. We are there to help be a tutor and a mentor to our students. And I think it's really important that our students have someone to look up to, and a lot of our coaches come from similar or same experiences or backgrounds that our students that we are working with. And to have our youth see our coaches be successful, it gives them that spark of hope that, you know, that's what I can be doing, and wanting to be successful with what they are going to do, help them stay in school, get their degree, and hopefully go on to more education and be successful. I believe one of the main reasons that we have been so successful in St. Cloud is the passion of our coaches. Every day when I visit, we have 17 coaches within five schools in St. Cloud. And every day I visit these schools, I can see the relationships that our students have with these coaches. And I hear from teachers and their appreciation of how our coaches have helped be that bridge to having them in class. So thank you again, and I hope you look at our data. And thanks for having us here today.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Johnson. Did you have, well, actually, we've got students here now, so would you like the students to say something while they're here?
Thank you, Madam Chair. We actually have two coaches, so they are young people, young adults, but that's one of the reasons why they connect so well. We have Evan and Saeed, part of a great team at St. Cloud Apollo.
Well, thank you. And this is just the chair aging herself, because everyone looks so young anymore. So, welcome. We're really glad to have you here. And if you would both just say your name for the record before you provide your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Evan Bell, and I'm a Dreamline coach at St. Cloud Apollo High School. I'd like to speak about the evidence of the impact that we've had with this program in St. Cloud. First, we know that we focus on grades and academics. So I've personally seen Fs go to As, and 30 missing assignments go to zero missing assignments. And we're a new program in St. Cloud, so we've been in the school system for maybe 6 months. So imagine what we could do in the future with more time and resources. Next would be the behavior, which is a very big deal that we know with getting to those grades and those academics. I've seen students that usually have problem behavior deal with difficult situations with respect and self-control. So we use the REACH curriculum through the Search Institute when we're mentoring and when we're working with these kids so that we can help them develop the socio and emotional skills that they need to act in accordance with a good academic environment. The attendance issue is large as well. You're not in class, you can't learn. So a part of that is the behavior, but also the relationship that we have with the students. We like to hold them accountable, and we have this connection where if I'm there, they're there. Whether that be like physically in the classroom or also being mentally engaged as well. So we are someone that they can count on to be there and to check in with them so that if they're not there, we're going to go and we're going to, like Stephen said, we will find them. So, I'd also like to talk about the evidence that I see personally working with these kids. A student who struggles, you can tell they maybe don't fit in, they may fall through the gaps, but when that student, and I see the look on their eyes when they're proud to show me their work, something that they may never have done like that year, that really moves me, and it proves to me that this is what I should be doing. And that's why I'm so thankful for Tony and the Sine Foundation for giving me the opportunity to gain my master's degree through this program. So we just finished a course now in my final project, and I'm very excited to move on and complete further courses so that I can use those skills that I'm learning through the master's program in the work that I do every day. The last thing I'd like to talk about is the teamwork of our team. So we have a really interesting dynamic and many coaches with different skills. Saeed is amazing at math, and my focus is language arts. So if we have a student who needs support in a specific area, we can bounce ideas off of each other, teach each other what we need to know, and also exchange roles for the moment. Also, the increasing diversity in St. Cloud is amazing. With our Somali population increasing so fast, it's amazing that we can have someone like Saeed who is bilingual and who can advocate for those students and also translate for me. So I'm very happy to be a part of this organization. I'm committed to the success of the organization and my students. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. And I think, do you have a question, Representative Sanseed, for Mr. Bell?
I do.
All right. Thank you, Senator.
Do you do anything to incentivize the students or to reward the students?
Absolutely. They don't get as much incentive from the grades as I do. So I want them to, you know, get some reward from getting an A, but for them it's usually something else. So I've gone from, you know, buying them a candy bar for to taking them on a walk to the coffee shop and, you know, in the school and getting them a snack of some kind, or even just spending some time with them doing an activity that they love to do, like draw or write, or let them show me their favorite song on YouTube. So any of those types of things act as rewards, and then those lead to the grades as being their reward as well.
Thank you. All right, I'm sorry, I do have other members who want to ask questions, but I was hoping we could hear from Saeed Akra, if I'm pronouncing that right, and then we'll go to questions. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam, for giving the time. And my name is Saeed Akra of Apollo High School, St. Cloud, Minnesota. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you all. And I want to talk about why I like to work as a Dreamland coach, St. Cloud. And I had the passion to help others from the beginning of my life, because I was being helped before in my life, because I grew up in a refugee camp back in Kenya, and I came here a few years ago, and I feel like I really like helping others because I was being helped. And what I like most working as a Dreamland coach is helping students improve their academic grades and behavior and a lot of things. And I really see that there's a lot of improvement for the last time you have been working with them. And for the few months we were there at the school, we saw a lot of improvements. And specifically, we had a lot of students that had F. And for example, I talked to a lot of my students, and when I asked them how they were, look back their grades, how they were the last semester compared to now, it's like they had a 5F, like the student had a 5 or 4F, and by now they have no F at all. And that's the most change I see in academic, and they have also change in behavioral issue, because their behavioral issue is reduced almost over 100%, and they are trying their best. And one most important thing about that is the relation we have with the parents, because as a bilingual, I'm kind of, the school used me as a tool of communication between the teachers, the students, and the parents, and that helped me more. Thank you very much for giving the time.
Thank you very much, Mr. Akra. And I think the St. Paul schools are lucky to have both you and Mr. Bell as coaches for the children there, and clearly you both are passionate about what you're doing, so we appreciate that. Representative Moran.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a few questions. Just really curious about the program, but really, really excited. I can hear the passion that comes from the principal, the assistant principal of the school, which is really, really good to hear such passion come from administrators about the good work that you're doing within the school. And I heard like some really key words, like students who are feeling connected now, they have built relationships. I guess my first question was going to be, who are the coaches? But, you know, I have a view of who are the coaches, but how do you recruit for the coaches is my question. How is that process done?
Mr. Santa.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative. We recruit through word of mouth. We have partnerships with universities. We go to a lot of job fairs. And we do it the old-fashioned way. We go out in the neighborhoods. We look for other community organizations that have youth or young individuals that have experience working with youth that want to develop their career and have an interest in teaching, and we can put them in an environment. So it's there is no, you know, silver bullet. It's on the ground, job fairs, college fairs, and getting out in the community and trying to work with other partner organizations as a way for young people to advance in our organization.
Thank you.
Representative Moran.
So how do you get the buy-in from school administrators?
Mr. Sena.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative. The buy-in is we don't come in and tell you what to do. We start in May, June in preparing. We do site visits. So we gauge the climate of your school. We have some deal breakers. We need space. We need use of your data. We need a clear point of contact to your school so we know who to go to. And we need to make sure that our staff are properly trained. We do meet weekly with school administrators to see how things are going. And we really build the program together. So we, as long as you don't break those deal breakers, we semi-customize it to fit your building. Because every building is different, with whether it's cultural, space-wise, or priority. So it's really working with the schools to build it together. And I guess that's how to buy in, because they take just as much ownership as we do.
Okay. Representative Moran.
Madam Chair, so you're right. Every school is different. But I heard some common themes, right, that there's behavior problems. There are disrespect, lack of self-control, excuses for why homework is not done. So maybe to the coaches or whoever can, give me some insight into what have you heard about why those issues are prominent and when they are, you know, just kind of like how do you do what you do to turn a zero into a 100.
Mr. Bell or Mr. Acker?
I can speak to that, Representative. The reason why is unknown. For each student, it may be something that happened in their past. It could be their present home situation, lack of support there. So what I've noticed and realized over the course of my education as well is that every student's unique, learns differently, and has a different life situation. So taking that into account, when we make those connections and build those relationships with the students, that gives us a view and an image of how we can then affect the student in a positive way. So maybe that's more of the academic piece, but a lot of the time I've noticed that when they lack support, let's say at home, they rely on me for that as well, which I'm absolutely happy to help them with. So whether it's if they need someone just to talk to about an issue with a boyfriend or girlfriend, right, I'm there. But also an issue with homework, I'm there as well. So it's making those connections with the unique characteristics of the student.
Could I ask something, Madam Chair?
Oh, yes.
And it is a little more scientific than that, too, because we do surveys with the REACH Institute, so we look at studies to show, you know, what it's going to take. And so where right now it seems the heart is where most of the students that we deal with need support. So it's really about being consistent and supporting them and making them feel valued. But every student is different. But scientifically, through surveys, we have data to show which is the best way to support it. And then also through their experience, they learn just by how they feel as well.
Representative Moran.
So, Madam Chair, I just really just want to end by saying thank you for your work, all. Thank you for your work and your commitment, because we do know that kids come into our school settings with issues, right, which impact their learning. And to have that connection and someone who can personally show them that, you know, they are valued, and it can be successful, it takes a lot of work. And so I just want to say thank you for your work and your commitment, and hopefully we can do something to make sure that we can grow the work that you're doing around the state.
All right. Thank you, Representative Moran. Representative Slocum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Your statistics are phenomenal. Highly high. Hi. I'm really pretty startled by them because they are incredible. They're just beautiful. I have a couple of questions. When you work with a mentee, how many do you stay with them a number of years, or how does that work,
Mr. Sena?
I will answer that, Madam Chair. Thank you. because, one, this is the first year that these guys have worked with us. Typically, we work in junior highs and high schools, and we concentrate on the first year, so the ninth grade will transition, because the data says if you fail ninth grade, then that's the highest probability you fail high school. And then in the junior high, we work with all the grades. So we build a support system for the students. In years two and three, typically the students come back and we see a lot of peer-to-peer mentoring. Our staff does change, but through this process, we're hoping through the cohort we're building that they'll stay in the schools longer. So they might not need as much help, but they can always go back to the room. And that's why we've negotiated with every school to give us space where this is a space that's culturally inviting for all kids to come to do homework in a safe and inclusive environment.
Representative.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. I think it's wonderful. And I would suggest if there's anything you can do to extend, we need to fund you more so that you can extend the mentoring to, you know, so you follow the same student for a couple of years. Because I think that would be great.
Mr. Santa.
Thank you, Representative. Yes, and I think that would help. We understand that we are trying to build a program that as efficient as possible. So our real core focus is, yes, we know we could do great things and we could follow a student for 4 years, you know, that intensively. But really in the year or 2 years that we're with the students, we get them to a point where we push them, really we're going to more avid support or college possible, or they just fit in mainstream. So after we build up their ability and their will to want to learn, we need to follow them because they're other great teachers in good schools. Obviously, if we could, we would, but our role is really making sure that they don't leave school and that they get into somewhere where they can be on their own 2 feet.
Representative Sagan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple more real quick ones. How involved are the parents in the program?
Mr. Santa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It differs by different schools. Obviously, there's a limit of time that our staff can work throughout the day. They start when school starts, and we do 2 hours after school every day. At different schools, CIAD works much more intensively with parents because of language issues. And so it really depends on the time and the scope. It's something that we've had at different levels in different years. It's not required. 4 years ago, we made it a requirement to have a parent phone call every week. And to run the program effectively, we were burning our staff with the amount of hours. But now we've found ways to engage the students, to engage their parents with success stories. And in some cases where there's language issues, we've been able to help that as well.
Thank you. You know, I used to make what I called happy calls. If I had a tough day at school, I'd pick a kid who didn't get a lot of positives, and I'd make a call home. You could hear the parents gasp, "The teacher is calling." And you know what? I'd say, "You know what your child did today? It was beautiful. It was just fabulous." And I just wanted to let you know. And I mean, it was great. I had the parents right here where I wanted them in the palm of my hand. And I also had the kids like, "Oh, you called my mom last night, you know." And it was like, "Yeah, I did, of course. I call your mom. I like your mom, you know." And it was the high flyers got plenty of strokes, but it was the kids kind of in the middle and the bottom that if they did something really well, somebody needed to call and say, "Yay to you." And it's a good thing. It's a good thing.
Thank you, Representative. We are working to continuously improve our program, and we will be highlighting the videos of all the principals that we interviewed online. But one of the assistant principals last week said that she got a call from a mother who said, "You know, my son's having a bad day. I'm a little bit worried about him. Just make sure he talks to the Dreamline coach today, and I know he'll be okay." So that means that the relationship is going back home, and we are reaching them in some capacity.
That's wonderful. One more question, Madam Chair.
We have three more bills on the agenda.
Okay. I will be so quick, but this is great. I see that you have separated the male and female students as far as numbers here. Do the male students and the female students do equally well in the program, or how do you address the gender difference?
Well, we do a lot of training. Part of the stuff that I do internationally is focus on women empowerment, so the training goes equally for our men and our female, and how we treat them both to respect them in creating that school climate. We have not differentiated. The outcomes have been pretty similar in academics and behavior in our school, so we haven't found a need to look at wholesale changes in the way we approach each demographic.
Thank you. It's really clear a little love and a little acceptance and respect goes a very long way.
Okay. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Excuse me, Mr. Senator. Appreciate the work you're doing, and it's clearly powerful. It sounds like, if we can play charades here for a minute, it sounds like a lot like what the Beacons program, the YMCA program, does, at least I know in my school district, and I know in a number of school districts, at least around the metro area, which doesn't take away from the good work you're doing, but I am wondering then about who else is providing similar services to you? Who do you see as your peer organizations, and how are you folks comparing best practices, networking? Could we move at some point from a one-off grant to some sort of funding that would make programs similar to this more available across the state?
Mr. Santa.
Thank you, Representative. I would say there's a lot of people that work in youth development and work in schools. I think the evidence is the evidence. And although we are new on the block, we've actually simplified things by going back to common sense. You know, I could tell you all the scientific basis of what we do and how many hours of professional development, but the reality is the first thing I tell them when they walk in the door, go into school and treat them like their little brother. We're not going to let your little brother get away with anything if you want him to do well. Now, it is great to work in best practices if everyone's doing it. We share our data with people. We share our best practices. We learn from a lot of people. College Possible was one of the first, Jim McCorkle, the first people I met when I was building this. And we go after a different demographic, and actually we try to get our students to his. So there is a lot of sharing that goes on. I don't want to talk negatively about other programs that are in the same space as us, but that I don't feel do the kind of work we do. We are committed to our kids. The ones that are similar, I think we are all day. We have some of our coaches coming to school at 6:30 to open up the buildings. And we say, why? And we say, well, because half these students are living in hotels and they don't have anywhere to go. But we had to limit the amount of kids that could come to school because that's how big the gym was. We stay all day. We have 80% of our staff are from communities of color. So we're willing to go and do the work to recruit them. Schools are hiring our staff weekly. Even we had an agreement with the St. Paul School District, they weren't allowed to hire our staff this year until the school year ended because we wanted to train them for them. 2 weeks into the school, they did put an offer, and the person actually decided to stay with us. So we are preparing our staff to move forward. We also stay after school. And a byproduct of this, which I did not mention, our coaches in the summer then work with the school districts to provide summer school activities, and then we also provide, last year we did 85 free summer camps for 7,600 kids. The average sports camp is 100 hours, so if you look at that, that's $750,000 that we put back into the community in free sports camps for access and opportunity for parents. So, yes, I would like to work with people. Everybody knows the Sana Foundation is built on partnerships. We don't do anything alone. Even the way we approach our work, we want to do them together. We work very closely with Builder Options, our mentoring organization, about best practices, the Search Institute, Sprockets, HSA, Promise Fellows, AmeriCorps. We learn from best practice from Check and Connect. I'm very good friends with people at the Y and the Beacons program. I'm building a product that I think is going to fit the needs of our students, and that means I'm trying to be efficient as possible to justify people donating money, because this isn't the only place that we come to for support. We need individual donors, and we need to differentiate ourselves. So if we're getting our students, our coaches, college degrees, professional development, jobs, if we're before school, during school, after school, in the summer, sometimes it's problematic because some people say, well, it's too good to be true, or what do you guys really do? What's your focus? our focus is doing whatever we need to do with to help kids. So to that, I wish more of us would work together and we could figure out a way to help more kids. And ultimately, someday, schools might inherit our project and say, we don't need to hire you anymore because we just want you to come and train us. You know, some people get scared when I say that, but this could end up being a best practice. And I'm okay with that because it means that every state of Minnesota, every student will have access to this kind of treatment.
Thank you.
Representative Jurgens.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be quick. I just have some questions on the logistics of the program. Who selects the students? Is it the school? Is it the parent? Is it the student him or herself? And do you have what sounds like a one-to-one ratio? Do the Dreamline coaches go class to class with the students, or just kind of help me understand how that part of it works, please?
Mr. Santa.
Thank you, Representative. Well, first of all, we meet with the school in the spring and in the summer, and we figure out their target audience. So a school could say, we want you only to work with left-footed people. You know, building relationships, we're going to get the same outcome no matter who we work with. So the school tells us which population they want us to serve. Right now, the majority of the schools tell us if you fail two or more of your core classes, math or English, the previous year, you're at a high risk of failing again. If you've been truant more than 2% but less than 10%, you're in this yellow area. If you're truant more than 10%, you're probably already high risk and somebody else is already serving you. If you've had, you know, 1 to 3 behavioral issues but less than 6, you're on a list of a pool. During the first semester, we worked with the school. There's also students that came to school that we thought were going to do okay but didn't. They get filled into this pool. Our staff then has to lock in a caseload of up to 30 students by the end of the first semester. That's chosen with the school and our coaches giving us the data that they give us. So they basically give us a data pool that these are the schools, the children that we want you to pick from. Our staff is diverse depending on the needs of the student. He's great in math, he's great in English. We look at the grades, they pair up that way. During the school day, their schedule is they spend half the day for 4 to 5 periods inside of classrooms. They might be in those classrooms supporting their students, but again, something we don't talk about, they're helping that whole class and their whole climate. So there's an extra adult in the classroom helping that teacher. We keep an eye on our students. Then also students sometimes, or teachers, will ask a student to go work with us one-on-one. If they've missed a day or two of school, we take the syllabus. Or in the classroom setting, the teacher teaches for the first half, and then we take a small group. So we measure what we do. We might measure work with you one-on-one. We find times one-on-one. Typically, that's where we work really hard to engage kids to come after school. And we do pull-ups, pull-outs. We drop into school, and we have our own room that students can come to. So it's a blended activity. The challenge is these guys have to make sure that they connect with their students enough during the day without disrupting the normal school. And that's why they're in the classroom or in general areas as well, and after school is a time when they're not tied up to anything. And like I said, they can spend as much time as they want doing academic support, but we found if they don't spend at least 8 hours doing mentoring, relationship building, instruction that they're given, they don't see quite the same increase in academic or behavioral data.
Thank you. So approximately 30 students per Dreamline coach. So you have your work cut out for it.
Thank you. Thank you. 20 to 30, yes.
All right. And final question, Representative Sanstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions are kind of logistic questions as well. How does the school district go about applying for grants like this? How do they prioritize which schools are going to get those grants based on limited funds? And then could this program be extended to elementary schools?
Mr. Santa.
Thank you, Representative. Well, we look at schools that we want to be in. First of all, we look at the needs. You know, students where there's economic disparities, high and free and reduced lunch are schools that we would focus on because they're the biggest need. We also look at leadership. Is the leadership, are they committed to excellence and equity? We ask the school for a match to make sure that the buildings have skin in the game as well. I believe that this program, and people don't like saying this, but it would probably be just as effective and maybe
more in elementary schools because just having an extra adult in the classroom helps more in that aspect. We actually went after a population that nobody was serving. People were forgetting about the high school kids and the junior high kids. My personal belief is if we don't want a forgotten generation of saying it's too late and in investing in these kids, and they'll tell you the F's go to A's, and also these young men and women that are our coaches are, you know, wanting to become teachers as well. So, you know, we work and it struggles a lot to where we should go. There's schools that want us, there's different districts. To be most cost effective, it's great to be in clusters because then it's a manager and a coordinator over four or five schools. You know, we looked at going outstate in different areas and in Rochester and Duluth or Owatonna. If we have to go somewhere where it's a one-off, we still need the leadership there, so the cost per building and the cost per student would increase a lot. In St. Cloud, we went there, so it's five schools. So one manager and coordinator work with those five schools. We can have one or two substitutes. When somebody's not there, we can also fill in as well. I hope that helps.
Nancy. Madam Chair, thank you. So I'm not sure if you actually answered, do the schools apply or do you actually choose a school?
We go to a number of, we go to a number of schools and we negotiate whether they want this, the program, based on their needs. So we pick schools that we're willing to work with, and schools approach us. And if they approach us, then we say, you know, these are our four deal breakers. Are you willing to find room for us? Are you willing to give us access to your data? Are you willing to give us a point of contact? And if they're willing to do those things, we sit down. Obviously, we can't expand to 100 schools overnight. So we are building it as fast as we can to ensure that we build our infrastructure as well. And so we pick schools, again, where there's the biggest need and we feel that there's the biggest buy-in with the leadership. There are some schools that we've been working with for a long time that we have had serious conversations with because when we started to build the program, maybe we didn't have best practices because something wasn't there. Now we know what's best practices, and we are going back to those buildings and saying, we would love to stay here, but you need to change. Like St. Cloud is a great example of best practices. We came in and we said, this is what we need to do. Do you want it? Because if you're willing to do this, you're going to get these results. So I guess to answer your questions, we try to find good marriages with people where there's a need, and we find the leadership there to support our work and belief.
Madam Chair, one more question. Is it fair to say, Representative Sansa, we really have to move on. We have three more bills in 45 minutes. So really short question. Yes, no question. Is it fair to say then initiation of this program is by the foundation rather than the school district?
No, I think it's dual.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you. Thank you. Well, obviously a very... a topic of great interest to the committee and that, but unfortunately we've got three other bills we've got to hear, and so Representative Tice, if you want to make any final comments.
I just want to recognize our fan section. I mean, I don't think the Santa Foundation, I told them quiet clapping. So this is what it is. They travel in teams. It's not just one person, it's a team. And we're very, St. Cloud is very fortunate to be on that team. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you so much. Great testimony. We appreciate you being here. And with that, Representative Tice renews her motion to lay over House File 268 for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you all very much. And let's see, Representative Scott, if you are ready. Right, members, and I don't know if anyone has their phone up near microphones, but make sure we keep them away because we're getting a little feedback today. All right, and Representative Scott moves that House File 670 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further action at a later time. And please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members, for hearing this bill today.
This bill proposes to make the compensatory pilot grant program permanent. As we learned from our hearing several weeks ago, the current compensatory revenue formula is dependent on the concentration of poverty in a school building and not poverty district-wide. This places school districts that built larger buildings to optimize administrative cost efficiencies at a funding disadvantage for their students in poverty. In 2005, the compensatory revenue pilot program began to provide revenue for several school districts uniquely situated with significant district-wide poverty. The pilot funding provides additional revenue and flexibility to participating districts to improve student performance district-wide. Since 2011, an additional $10 million over the base funding of $4.65 million was appropriated amongst the seven identified school districts each biennium. School districts currently receiving pilot grants include Albert Lea, Anoka Hennepin, Brooklyn Center, Osseo, Robbinsdale, Rochester, and South Washington. My testifiers today represent several districts in the program and will provide important information on how the pilot revenue and flexibility has impacted student learning in their districts. Thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to your testifiers, and if each of you would just be sure to state your name at the beginning of your testimony.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, good to see you all again. I'm David Law, Superintendent from the Anoka Hennepin School District, and I want to be respectful of the fact that you've heard my story several times. I will point out that yesterday the St. Paul Pioneer Press referenced the fastest growing cities with poverty in the metro area, and the last time I was here, I had a principal from Lincoln Elementary School for the Arts, who that school is located in Anoka. Anoka was listed with the same amount of poverty as the city of Minneapolis and within a percentage point or two of the city of St. Paul. Unfortunately, those students in Anoka feed a much larger high school, Anoka High School, that's 2,400 students. So while the city itself is comparable in poverty to Minneapolis or St. Paul, those students get buried in a larger system. They are among the 13,000 students in poverty in Anoka Hennepin School District, and I have said many times those students would represent one of the 10 largest districts in the state. Because of the current structure of the funding, we don't have the concentration in our five comprehensive high schools or in any of our 42 educational sites to get the amount of resources other districts get. And I'm certainly not criticizing any other district for the resources they get. This pilot allows us to provide additional resources in larger sites. I have in front of you the similar data that you've seen before that shows positive trends and the positive impact of our coaching and our blended model for direct student support across our 24 elementary sites. We've got a high priority on the World's Best Workforce legislation, getting kids ready to read by third grade. Our third grade proficiency is climbing 4 years in a row, and we anticipate it'll climb again next year. We feel like the results we have in our system warrant a continuation of this project. Certainly, permanency is our goal with this bill. We appreciate you giving us a chance to testify again today, and I'd be happy to answer any questions at the end of this.
Well, thank you, Mr. Law. Appreciate you being here. Welcome, Ms. McGuire.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kate McGuire, and I serve as the superintendent for Osseo Area Schools. I'll testify in support of House File 670, which holds Harmon West, the district's currently receiving the pilot compensatory grants. Osseo Area Schools is the fifth largest district in the state of Minnesota, serving more than 20,000 students in the northwest suburbs of Brooklyn Park, Maple Grove, Dayton, Corcoran, Rogers, Plymouth, Osseo, and Brooklyn Center. Almost 55% of our 20,000 students are students of color. We serve the third highest number of students of color in the state of Minnesota. We have 11 racially identifiable schools, and we're a racially isolated school district. A section of the city of Brooklyn Park, which is served by our school district, has been designated by the Metropolitan Council as a racially concentrated area of poverty, the first such designation outside of Minneapolis and St. Paul. For the 2015-17 funding period, Osseo Area Schools received $1.32 million. In compensatory pilot funding, or the equivalent of $660,000 a year for the two-year funding period. In Osseo Area Schools, the compensatory revenue pilot funds have to be directly aligned with the district's World's Best Workforce Strategic Plan. Interventions have to center on the educational needs of students achieving below grade level. Over the years, the compensatory revenue pilot funds have allowed us to offer professional development, secure additional staff, and purchase instructional materials that are necessary for equitable student achievement. In Osseo Area Schools, for the 2015-17 funding period, the compensatory revenue pilot provided support to 10 non-Title I schools based on MCA reading and math scores and free and reduced lunch students. Even within these 10 schools, there are varying student needs, so each principal develops a plan tailored to the individual school building. Among the 10 schools that received additional support, there was as much as an 11% increase in MCA reading proficiency and as much as an 11% increase in MCA math proficiency. Moreover, our three comprehensive high schools have seen an increase in their overall graduation rates on time over the past 5 years, and the on-time graduation rates for white, black, Asian, American Indian, and free and reduced lunch students outperformed the state. In addition, schools receiving pilot compensatory funds increased grade 3 proficiency rates by 2.4% over the last 4 years. These schools demonstrated overall accelerated growth on MCA reading tests and outperformed the state by 10% for students achieving high growth. Finally, over 4 years, these schools have closed the achievement gap in reading proficiency for students of color by 6%. Compensatory revenue pilot funding is an important resource for Osseo area schools and allows for greater programming options with a focus on ensuring equitable student achievement for all students and closing the achievement gap. As we've demonstrated, the compensatory revenue pilot funding helps us to meet the world's best workforce goals of ensuring that each third grader can read at grade level, each student graduates from high school, and ensuring that those gaps are closed along the way on all state-mandated measures. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Ms. McGuire. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Representatives. My name is John Carlson. I'm the Executive Director of Finance at Rochester Public Schools. Rochester is a diverse school district serving more than 17,600 students, of which 6,500 plus have reported themselves as non-white. And in October 2016, our enrollment included 6,400 free and reduced price lunch students. I want to share with you some actual examples of how the compensatory pilot project is working in Rochester and some real results we are seeing. First, Fidel Middle School is currently using the funds to provide 6 hours per day of math tutoring for 41 students, 5 hours per day of reading tutoring for 43 students, and homework support help after school. In the last 5 years, as measured by the MCA, the math proficiency has increased from 69.9% to 76.4% at this school building. Reading proficiency has increased from 77% to 81.5%. Second, Willow Creek Middle School is currently using the funding to provide 337 students extra opportunity in math and language arts through small group interventions by licensed teachers. Preliminary data this year from our NWA testing is showing improvement for these specific students, and we're confident that pulling these students into smaller groups for focused teaching time is paying off. John Adams Middle School has been using the funding to provide professional development for teachers and additional support for technology resources. John Adams is proud to report that last school year, 69% of the sixth graders who received intensive intervention made more than 1 year of reading growth. Finally, Kellogg Middle School has used the funding to invest heavily in technology to enhance teaching. Kellogg has been using the technology in many areas across the school, but specifically in EL and special education. They're proud to report that thanks to being able to buy a special app, 100% of their DCBMM special ed students have increased their proficiency in math this school year. So in conclusion, there are many positive things to say about the compensatory pilot project in Rochester. The money is providing staff development, providing extra staff for smaller groups of students, and putting extra technology in students' hands. We're seeing positive results when the data is analyzed and reported to the department every year. I highly encourage you to continue the funding at an amount equal or greater to than what's been allocated in the last 4 years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. And Representative Scott, did you have any additional testifiers today?
No, ma'am.
Okay. All right. All right. So we will go then to questions. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for Mr. Strom. With compensatory revenue, we talk about it being generated at a site. How is this pilot program structured in relationship to the sites that, because of these districts, don't generate as they would? Can you think of it in the same way, or do we need to think about it differently?
Mr. Strong.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, as the superintendents and business manager have said, under the pilot program, the district adopts a plan according to the 2005 law that tells them what kinds of things can go into their plan. But each of their boards adopts a separate plan to govern the activities that they will use that compensatory money for. And in essence, essentially, the goal behind that from the members who sponsored that legislation originally was that because the site level counting didn't work for these schools, this money was added on top of the site level funding, but the plan for distribution of that was left to the districts, as was the plan for examining the effectiveness of that. So each of the witnesses could very quickly tell you what they've put in their plan regarding that. But the legislation itself for the pilot grant program, which has been with us for since the 2005 year at least, and maybe preceding that, essentially let the board determine how they would identify those factors.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Follow-up question, Mr. Strom. A couple of years ago, we granted districts greater latitude in how they spent their compensatory and whether they spent it for the purposes intended or not, and at the site. Do these pilot districts have that same 50% latitude on how they spend this money or not?
Mr. Strong.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, yes, they have the same latitude. They actually have greater latitude because it's according to their plan that this money is spent. It still needs to be for the same uses as all of the other compensatory money.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Markwart.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I, first of all, want to congratulate all the presenters for narrowing the achievement gap and getting the results. That's very commendable. Question for Mr. Strom. this has been a pilot program for how many years? And ultimately, I knew it was going to be permanent because once you start a pilot program like this, you can't take it away. You really can't. So moving forward, what I would like is there some formula we could put in so that if another school kind of qualifies in the same type of situation, that they wouldn't be excluded? Because I think now that we're making it permanent, is there a formula basis behind it at all, or was it just back in 2005? Because I think in 2011 or 2012, we actually added Albert Lea, I believe, and maybe another school, is there a formula there, and is there something we can do to kind of standardize this for other schools that might be in the same boat, that are not included in these school districts right now? And I don't know if that's your question.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Markwart, you may recall also from the, I believe, the 2011-2012 years, there was a second formula added that tried to get at this through a formula basis. One of the problems is that in terms of finding a single formula, is that it can be relatively expensive. And so when Representative Garofalo was the chair in 2011 and 12, a second pilot was created on top of this one with the idea of trying to do that through a formula. But essentially that ended up having some school size limitations in it, district size limitations in it that other legislators didn't find as persuasive. And so I think the short answer, and so those two programs then essentially got combined a bit, which is why a couple more districts got added to the list. I don't think you could, let me phrase that slightly differently. I don't think I could back into a formula that would provide these amounts for the participating districts. Each of the seven districts has presented a bit of a different story to the committee in past years about what their needs are, and those amounts, because they are grant amounts, have been determined as a grant amount and not as a formula-driven amount.
Representative Markwart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Strom. And I mean, I don't know if there's other districts now, and I think it's working well, but I guess Madam Chair would be ready to look at, you know, if others say, hey, we're kind of in the same boat, and just how you might respond to that in the future.
Thank you, Representative Markwart. And I think as a former chair of this committee, too, you understand sort of the desire to get away from the continuing pilot program situation. So, other questions? All right. Seeing none, Representative Scott, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would just appreciate your support and the support of the members of the committee to put this in the funding bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Scott. She renews her motion that House File 670 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or action at a later time. Thank you very much to all the testifiers for being here. And let's see. Representative Poston, if you're ready. All right, well, welcome, Representative Poston. I think this is your first bill presentation in the Education Finance Committee.
It is.
All right, very good. Well, congratulations. And and you also have, there is a printed amendment in the packet, and you have a slight oral amendment to correct a drafting error. Is that correct?
Yes, Madam Chair, I do. The amendment is marked A3.
Okay.
And the drafting changes are, if you go to the first line, that says page 1, line 12, delete $1 million and insert. That insert should be $1,485,000. And on page 1, line 13, delete $1 million and change that 1645 to 1535. And the reason for that change is we made a small mistake down below where it says St. Catherine's University. That number should be changed to $110,000.
All right.
Or so, St. Cloud. I'm very sorry. St. Cloud.
St. Cloud. Okay. So, all right. So let's go ahead and move your bill to have it before us, and then we'll have Mr. Strom just reiterate that to make sure everyone has it correctly. So Representative Poston moves House File 1874. Be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill, and also has an author's amendment, the A3, to get the bill in the shape he would like. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Strom, if again you want to go over that oral correction to the A3 amendment.
Madam Chair, members, Ms. Keene says this language on 1.6, I accidentally doubled the amount there. That should be 110,000 on line 1.6 instead of the 220,000. And then, as Representative Postman said, we'll correct the totals at the top by reducing those each by 110,000. So there'll be 1,485,000, 1,535,000, and then 110,000.
Very good. So any questions about that? Seeing that, all in favor of the A3 amendment with the oral technical change, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. The amendment, the oral change is added to the legislation. And Representative Poston, please go ahead and present your bill.
Madam Chair, first I would just like to say that the amendment really is adding three entities to this bill. And the reason that these three entities are being added is because Concordia University, St. Thomas, Hamline University, and Augsburg have done such a great job with this program. House File 1874 is the Collaborative Urban Educator Program, and the Collaborative Educator Program is designed to recruit people of color and people with unique cultural, ethnic, linguistic, and urban backgrounds into the teaching profession. Education experts agree that attracting more diverse and effective teachers to our schools is the key to academic success for all youth. And the schools that are currently involved in this program have done a remarkable job, and I'd like to give you just a few statistics. St. Thomas has had 437 graduates since 1991 in this program. Concordia has had 200 graduates in this program since 1998. Hamline has had 250 graduates since 1996. And Augsburg has had 24 graduates since 2013. Collectively, these institutions have increased the number of teachers of color in Minnesota by approximately 25%. So again, that amendment adds three new locations, St. Catherine's University, a Metropolitan State University, and then a collaboration between Independent School District 742 in St. Cloud and St. Thomas University. And with that, I'll let my testifier speak.
All right. Thank you, Representative Wilson. Welcome. And if each of you would just state your name at the beginning of your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. My name is Doug Hennis. I'm Vice President for University and Government Relations at St. Thomas. I will provide an overview of the four programs that are seeking renewed state funding in the next 2 years, and also describe the three new programs that that have come up. I want to thank the chair of the committee and the legislature for their support of various programs over the last 20 years. Bottom line, people always ask why these programs are necessary, and there's really three simple reasons. The teacher workforce in Minnesota is greatly lagging in terms of keeping up with the student diversity growth. Studies do show that students of color are more successful if they learn from teachers who reflect their own backgrounds. 31% of the students today in Minnesota are of color, but only 4.2% of the teachers. And this is a growing problem throughout greater Minnesota. So what have we done and what do we want to do in the future? Our four institutions, St. Thomas, Hamline, Concordia, St. Paul, and Augsburg, operate highly successful teachers of color programs. There's four critical steps: recruitment, education, mentorship, and retention. As Representative Poston mentioned, 25% of the 2,541 teachers of color in Minnesota came through these four programs thanks to assistance from the legislature. Programs are innovative, they complement each other, our institutions work together well, and the programs really do beautifully fit the missions of our institutions. St. Thomas began its program in 1991 on its own. We expanded in 1997 with legislative funding. It's a post-baccalaureate alternative licensure program for part-time students. As Representative Poston mentioned, we have 437 alumni, plus we have 48 students this spring who will receive their special ed or ESL licenses and be placed in public school districts. Our alumni retention rate in education is 76% over 25 years, and we have about 80% teachers of color. Concordia St. Paul began its Southeast Asian teacher program in 1998 with legislative funding. It's a bachelor's degree and teacher licensure program that targets EAs and TAs in the St. Paul School District. 200 alumni, 22 current students. The retention rate in education has been 94% for those alumni, and 100% of the students who've gone through the program are of color. Hamline began its program in 1996 and expanded it in 1997, again with legislative funding. It's a licensure and degree program, plus they have a new program where they're working with high school students of color to enter a specialized degree program at Hamline. 250 alumni, plus they have had professional development programs for 900 K-12 teachers during their first years of their work in school districts. Alumni retention rate in education, 80%. Teachers of color have gone through the program, 90%. And the Augsburg program, which my colleague here to the right will describe shortly, they began their East African teachers program in 2013, again with legislative funding. It's a licensure and degree program in Minneapolis. They're interested in expanding it to Rochester, and they've again had about 24 students in the program. So those are the existing programs. We're looking for assistance in establishing three new programs. St. Thomas wants to expand the Q program to St. Cloud. The education department has been encouraging us to look for ways to take this program out into greater Minnesota. We did a survey last fall of the five largest school districts in the 13 different MDE geographic regions. 34 of the 65 districts responded. 10 indicated an interest in our program. We did site visits earlier this year. Bottom line is we've decided to start a two-year cohort of 20 special education licensure students this fall in St. Cloud. And teachers from, or students from other neighboring districts would be able to attend as well. If successful, we would look to expand that program beginning in 2020. St. Catherine University is looking to start a Q-like program beginning this fall. 10 or more students of color with associate's degrees would be seeking licensure and degrees in elementary education with an emphasis in STEM. And Metro State is looking for assistance for tuition and living stipends. Metro State has 150 students of color in their degree programs right now, and those students need assistance for living stipends during their semester-long student teaching assignments. So when you add it all up, we believe that the state funding is really critical to assist in operating these programs and providing tuition-free education or heavily subsidized tuition for individuals who simply would not be able to enroll. State funding supplements institutional funds that each of our schools puts in. It also helps leverage additional funds from local foundations such as Bremer, Bush, and O'Shaughnessy. Additional support in Representative Poston's bill would allow us to expand these programs to play a larger role in increasing the diversification of the teacher workforce throughout Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hennis. And welcome, Ms. Lensmeyer.
Thank you. I'm Dr. Audrey Lensmeyer. I'm a professor at Augsburg College, and I'm the director of the Q-funded program that we call EAST. I'd like to thank you, Madam Chair, for the opportunity to speak today and for the representative for forwarding House File 1874. I'd like to also acknowledge Representative Ilhan Omar, who was a community member in the Cedar Riverside community, who along with Representative Dabney came to Augsburg requesting this program. And so I'm honored to be here today with all of you and speak about the success of our program. Thank you very much for the overview into the work that we do. Just have a couple of more details about what this looks like on the ground as the director of the program. Augsburg College supports my work in allowing me to administer the program. We have had 24 candidates, all East African candidates, come through our program. They take an average of 2.5 years, so the data is interesting. In 4 years, we don't have two full cohorts of students who have completed. But it's important that I emphasize to you that 100% of the tuition is covered. These are scholarships directly given. 76% of our funding goes directly to tuition. And I think that looking at the overhead and the administrative costs continues to be important. This money is going to tuition, cost of living stipends, NES support. We run programs that support all teachers of color in the Twin Cities Metro to study for and to pass the NES exams. It's taking students of color an average of 3 times to pass each of those exams. And I've had the opportunity to testify here in years past about the racial discrimination found in those exams. I'd like to say 3 more things. We're a highly competitive program. There are many East African immigrants who want to become teachers. Number 2, we're known, we're well known in the Cedar Riverside community for the work that we do. And what that means is that your constituents in the Twin Cities know that you value having Somali and other East African teachers in public schools. And I believe that that's important, particularly in this time. And finally, last week I spoke at a national panel on diversifying the teacher workforce, where teacher educators from across the country came together to think about this problem that we face in diversifying the teacher workforce and retaining diverse teachers. And I have to tell you that Minnesota is a model, and we were looked at with envy for the support that the state gives us by saying that we really value having diverse teachers in classrooms with kids, with all kids. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Dr. Linsmeyer. Appreciate your comments and being here today. Any questions for the witnesses or for Representative Poston? Representative Thiessen.
Thank you. I guess I don't know who this is for, but how does this, we've heard other programs to get teachers of color already this year. How does this fit in with those?
Thank you. I'll allow Mr. Strom to describe the specifics, but this is a grant program that we've had for a number of years. I don't remember how many, but it started with four schools and was expanded to include additional schools. Representative Strom, or Mr. Strom, I'm sorry, I demoted you.
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, this has been the one long-term funding mechanism for teachers of color that's been part of the K-12 budget. There were some... I'm sorry?
I just wanted to throw your own.
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, yes, there have been a number of single-year initiatives, and back in the mid-90s, there were, I think Ms. Adrians and I will check, I think for 4 years running, there was a Teachers of Color appropriation that was somewhat separate from this, but the Collaborative Urban Educator program has been a consistent line item in the K-12 budget. Generally speaking, from a budgetary perspective, four things that are related to the higher ed systems, if the K-12 committee funds them in 1 year, in the following year, they generally go more to their committee of jurisdiction. So a grant, for example, that went to Metro State in future years might be considered something that the higher ed committee would deal with. But the Q funding, the Collaborative Urban Educator Program, has included those three, all but the Augsburg School for 20 years, and that's been a consistent line item. Other initiatives like the Grow Your Own are very recent, and there haven't been too many other between the 1990s and the recent spate of funding last year. There weren't many grants for individual programs outside of Q.
Representative Thiessen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so I guess the other question I had, it kind of ties into jurisdiction a little bit, I suppose. How come we don't, I mean, first of all, although the programs seem like they're doing great work, they're limited in how many teachers they can train, right? Why don't we just give the money to the students of color and let them choose their program and do, which would allow, presumably, a lot more people to be able to access these programs? And maybe that's, I don't know.
I said it, one of the testifiers has offered to respond to that. So, Mr. Hennessy.
Madam Chair, Representative Thiessen, you could give the money directly to the student, but in many ways you're doing that already because we are writing either tuition-free or heavily subsidized tuition.
We're also locking them into your program.
That's true,
Mr.
but I think that we've been able to demonstrate over 25 years, 20 years with help in the legislature, that our program have been highly successful and in educating teachers of color and retaining. I mean, a 76% retention rate over 25 years is something we're pretty proud of, and we think we've got a good program and system in place to continue that.
And I think Dr. Linsmeyer wanted to comment
on
that.
Well, if you could just answer this question too. I mean, I that's great that we have 76% retention, but we also have a huge problem with teachers of color in this state. We've been doing this for 20 years, and we still don't have very, you know, what is the portion of teachers of color in Minnesota?
6%. Yeah, the chair.
4%?
A little over 4. Dr. Linsmeyer.
So two things, I think, to answer your question. The first is that we certainly could do that, what you suggest, give the money directly to students from the state, which would probably become a board of teaching then, or MDE-administered grant program to individuals. And I'm not particularly against that idea. However, there's something to be said for what we do on the inside, and that the cohort model, and there's a lot of research in communities of color about the need for spaces where folks of color can be together. And so, for example, in my program, every other week, there's a Q meeting where it's East African people, 12, 20 in the room, and we've developed an extensive network of working East African teachers, support around the particular needs of that particular racial community today. So that's one advantage that I think our programs offer.
Representative Thiessen?
We don't have to pursue this much more. I mean, I think that if that is an advantage, people are going to choose that program. But
mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I think you asked a valid question. Representative Dabney.
Madam Chair, Dr. Lenzmeyer read my mind. Answered the question before I asked it. The importance of a cohort mm-hmm. experience.
Mm-hmm. You mean the
Dr. Lenzmeyer,
sorry. Right. Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, the research on retention across the nation of teachers of color is dismal. And so one of the salient points in the research is that we can create cohort models, and those are culturally affirming, emotionally affirming, academically, intellectually affirming spaces. And teachers of color go out into primarily white public schools, white environments. And so the key issue now is the retention issue. How are we going to have those cohorts continue? And that's what we're looking at now. How can our funding extend beyond the licensure, okay, and into the classroom? So we're working with districts, we're working with experts on sustaining teachers of color in difficult spaces.
Thank you. And
Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Hennis.
One thing I guess I would add is that Dr. Lenzmeyer is right on the cohort model. One of the reasons we think she's been successful is because in our case, we decided to focus on it being a post-baccalaureate program. In many cases, the people deciding to go into the program were making a career change. They had roots in the community. They were more inclined to stay in teaching once they got involved. And, I think that says a lot for the program, too, and kind of the approach we took in recruiting students. And then after they're in the schools and teaching, you know, that mentorship needs to continue, and they have a network they develop over time.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, sir, in the 25 years that this program has been in existence, how many times have we expanded it as you're asking it to be expanded today?
Mr. Hennis.
Representative Murphy, Madam Chair. St. Thomas started the program on its own, went to the legislature in 97 seeking funds so we could have more than one small cohort. So we typically have been able to fund two cohorts of up to 25 people each over the years. At one point in the early 2000s, we were getting $800,000 of biennium. When the state had its budget problems in the 2000s, the program was cut back to the mid-300s. We're up to around we're seeking 500 this year. We're up to around 460 this year. So the program actually, in terms of legislative funding, has shrunk, but we have still tried to maintain those two cohorts we do every year with these funds.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Not seeing any other questions. Representative Poston, final comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a great program. I think the four schools are producing really good results. I think the three additional schools will as well, and I'd appreciate your support.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Poston. And Representative Poston renews his motion that House File 1874, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further action at a later time. Thank you very much to all of you testifiers. Appreciate you being here. And Representative Lee, we have saved best for last. I see something covered in foil there, which is making me
Very curious. Well, we are very pleased to have you before the committee, Representative Lee. And you have two students with you, and I understand one of your students is a page here at the legislature.
Yes, she is, Madam Chair.
That's wonderful. So I will go ahead and move your bill so that it is formally before us. I would move that House File 1661 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill or further action at a later time. And welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fu Lee, Representative District 59A. So I have the pages bring over some treats, being before the Education Finance Committee for the first time. And thank you for the opportunity to present House File 1661. This bill makes permanent a provision passed last session to allow late arriving English language learners to generate graduation incentive aid for an additional year if they are enrolled in an early middle college program. And as many of you all may know, an early middle college program is part of a post-secondary enrollment options PSEO statute and allows students who have struggled in traditional high schools or who have arrived late to this country to take college classes while working on making up their high school credits. Currently, there's 23 districts that participate in early middle college programs, and I understand that others are going through the authorization process. And you should have a list of the currently approved programs in your packet. And students from Minneapolis, Edina, Robbinsville, Brooklyn Center, Moundsview, and Intermediate 916 participate in Minneapolis Community and Technical College Early Middle College program called Destination Diploma D2 Degree, or D3 for short. And many of the students in Minneapolis who participate in D3 are late arriving English learners. While the majority complete the program before age 21, a small number need an additional year to get the credits they need to graduate. And this year, five students in Minneapolis took advantage of this new law, and I'm excited to report that five are on track to graduate this spring. Madam Chair, what impressed me the most about this program is the student retention rate. 100% of the students who participated either graduated or continued to complete their diploma. We must remember that these students are students who have interrupted education or, in some cases, no formal education before coming to the country. And they arrive as teenagers, and yet they are learning English and completing necessary high school credits and are taking some college courses. And as we are working on this bill, another related issue came up that I hope we can address in a future legislative session. Students who stay beyond age 21 to get their diploma are actually counted as dropouts for state reporting purposes. And last year, Wellstone School graduated 19 students older than 21, and all of these graduates are considered dropouts on our state graduation and MMR reports. And currently, these students are attending the University of Minnesota Duluth, MCTC, St. Kate's, St. Paul College, and Morehouse State. And I hope that we can work with Chair Erickson and the committee to ensure that these students in the school that they attend are being counted. And I would like to turn it over to two students that are currently participating in D3. Aswin Navas and Zara Sharif are two students who, if we do not pass House File 1661, will be unable to participate in early middle college. And Madam Chair, as it turned out, like you mentioned, Ms. Sharif is one of our high school page, so I think that this is timely.
Very timely, and thank you so much for taking time to be here. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and all the representatives. My name is Zahra Omar Sharif. I was born in Ethiopia and grew up in Kenya in refugee. I have been almost all my life been the refugee camp. I always went to school. I never gave up educating, gaining knowledge. And I came to the United States last year in July. And I went to Wellstone International High School, which gave me a great opportunity to study furthermore. And then after studying in the after being in Wellston International School, I was offered an opportunity to go to the MCTC to learn more English, to have some classes, so like English classes. I give thanks to all the to all my school teachers because they gave me this opportunity to go to college, to attend college and high school at the same time. Despite of knowing all the knowledge, all the languages, I have been looking up to English every time because I want to be a physician assistant in my goals. And I want to be successful in this country, in the United States, which have given me a great opportunity to study more and to be in college. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thank you for being here. And I'm sorry, when did you come to this country?
It was last year in July.
Oh, so only not even 2 years you've been here. Wonderful. You've done a wonderful job with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
Welcome.
Madam Chair, member of the committee, hello, my name is Edwin Navas. I'm a student at Western International High School in Minneapolis. Thank you for taking the time to hear my story. I am from Guatemala. When I was in my country, I dedicated myself to working with my father in the harvest from Monday to Saturday. It was my routine. I just received a schooling at the 6th elementary grade. Because of this, I worked. What I earned was not enough to pay to attend school. I hear that the United States have many opportunities to study, to work, and life serve. Then I decided to come to the United States. In 2014, arriving in Minnesota, I was 18 years old. When I arrived in Minnesota, I did not know any English. My English level was zero. In 2014, attending Western International High School, it was hard for me because of the culture shock and because I didn't know English, the language spoke here in the United States. Also, the benefit, values, or moral are different here in the United States. My first day of school was very hard because the teacher spoke to me in English. I didn't understand what they were saying, but then slowly I started to learn English. Thanks to a teacher who helped me a lot, I would also like to thank all Western staff for me, making me feel like I belong here, and for also making Western my home. In August of 2016, I started my third year studying at Western International High School. My favorite class are biology, government, and economics. Western gave me the opportunity to attend the program G3 at MCTC. It has helped me to improve my English. In MCTC, I take the writing, listening, speaking, and writing classes. It has not been easy, but this program has helped me to improve my English. That is my second language. I turned to 21 this year, so I will not be able to continue in the G3 program at MCTC if you do not pass this bill. I hope to become a agronomist, engineer, firefighter, or to be in the army. I like these three jobs, and I would like to do in my life one of these things, or more than one. Thank you for listening to my testimony. I hope you will pass this bill so I may put him in the DT program as I finish my high school diploma.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, I have to commend both of you for your commitment to getting your education. I can't imagine how difficult it must be to come to a country where you don't speak the language. You're at the age where a lot of students may be graduating from high school, and you're having to accelerate your learning, but you're both very committed, obviously, to doing that. And so my highest commendation to both of you. You did a wonderful job with your testimony. And I will be pursuing discussions with the department about categorizing you as dropouts. Mr. Uni, put that on the list for our next discussions. And Representative Erickson is echoing that as well as chair of the policy committee. Any questions for these witnesses or for Representative Lee? All right, and we are running up on time. I must say he brought delicious treats, which I will encourage everyone to grab on their way out the door. I just wanted to make sure we didn't take away from the students' testimony in passing the food around. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I certainly cannot improve upon the students' testimony, but I am seeing a connection between the last bill and this bill, and that is if we want to increase the percentage of students, of teachers of color, we need to be intentional about it, and the Q program allows us that. If we want to reach more kids who are not currently being well reached, these early middle programs have taken off across the state in the last few years because they work for kids that we haven't been working for. And being intentional about that, whether they're students like this who are recent immigrants or native-born students, we need to be intentional about it. So thank you for giving Representative Lee's bill a hearing and for focusing in on places where we can make some progress today.
All right. Thank you, Representative Dabney. And absolutely, as we were learning, education really has to be individualized in meeting students where they are and helping them to attain where they are hoping to be. So I think Chair likes your bill very much, Representative Lee. So thank you. And with that, any final comments from you?
Madam Chair, I just want to say thank you to yourself for this opportunity to present House File 1661 and members of the committee. I urge your support and for possible inclusion in the final bill. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And thank you so much to Mr. Navas and Ms. Sharif for your wonderful testimony. And with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1661 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Thank you all so much. Thank you for the treats. They look fantastic. So appreciate that. With that, committee members, we are adjourned.